ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Tuesday, the 16th of December. I'm Sabra Lane, coming to you from Nipaluna, Hobart. The sails of Sydney's Opera House were lit up last night with a large Jewish candelabra in honour of the 15 people murdered at Sunday's Hanukkah terrorist attack at Bondi Beach. A vigil was held at the Bondi Pavilion last night where the mass shooting took place, many people leaving bunches of flowers, expanding the sea of floral tributes already there. AM's Catherine Gregory was at last night's vigil.
Eerily quiet and deserted, Bondi Beach, cold, windy and devoid of its usual crowds on Monday afternoon. But by the pavilion, the site where 15 people were shot dead while celebrating the Jewish holiday Hanukkah, lies a rapidly growing bed of flowers. And a vigil for the victims of the mass shooting terrorist incident, including 10-year-old Matilda, Ellie Schlanger, a rabbi, Holocaust survivor Alexander Clayton, and former New South Wales police officer Peter Maher. Members of the local Jewish community still coming to terms with what happened.
Shock and disappointment. I mean, I was born in Sydney. I went to school around the corner. This is my home, and I don't think I ever contemplated something as horrific as this happening.
A sense of safety destroyed.
To not feel safe at your local beach, where you hang out with your friends, where you hang out with your family, there's not quite words for that.
But anger is seeping through, and local Ryan Jacobs is directing it towards our leaders.
I think ultimately there needs to be some responsibility and accountability taken. So I think, first of all, Anthony Albanese needs to resign.
And I know a lot of Jewish people are even talking about leaving Australia. Is that something you've even considered?
I'd heard a couple of people talking about leaving Australia kind of days and weeks and months ago, and I didn't think much of it. I thought they were kind of overreacting. Now I would consider it. It's not something I'm actively considering.
AM spoke to others at Bondi who also want the government to do more to stamp out anti-Semitism.
The government has got to take real and proper action. Not words. We're not interested in words. We're interested in change and real action.
When you say action, what specifically would you like to see?
Well, we can't sit by anymore and watch people burning the Israeli flags at the foot of the Opera House stairs.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese defends his recent actions on anti-Semitism and counter-terrorism.
What they require me as Australia's Prime Minister at this time is to bring the nation together, is to promote unity.
There are also questions about how the gunman, 24-year-old Naveed Akram, and his now-dead father, Sajid Akram, and their intentions were not picked up by intelligence earlier, given one of them was known to our domestic intelligence agency, ASIO, for his close ties to a Sydney-based Islamic State terrorism cell in 2019.
They weren't part of a wider cell, is the advice that we have up to this point. And therefore the detection wasn't there. We have given every resource to our police agencies, to our intelligence agencies.
The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, ending Catherine Gregory's report. Now reporter Tanya Dendrinos is at Bondi Beach.
Sabra, it is still very sombre here in Bondi this morning. Albeit early, there has been a steady stream of people coming to the pavilion, some leaving floral tributes, others taking a moment to simply reflect or pray in front of the growing sea of flowers. Among the bunches and notes left is a reminder of the children caught up in Sunday night's terror attack, including 10-year-old Matilda, who was one of the 15 victims. People have left soft toys, including koalas and a kangaroo. There's certainly still an overwhelming era of reflection here today.
For a lot of us, we're not surprised. We knew this day would come. So yeah, there's a lot of anger. This is a very vulnerable area. There's a concentration of Jewish community. It's very multicultural. So it was always, you know, to my mind, seen as a vulnerable area. But yeah, there's not much you can do now. We'd prefer not to see this. We'd have preferred to come down and have our coffees, walk on our beach and have our swim. But now we're looking at floral tributes instead.
It's a Bondi local there at the vigil site. And Tanya, is there an update on those injured?
Sabra, New South Wales Health says 27 people who were injured remain in hospitals across Sydney. Six are listed as in a critical condition and six others as critical but stable. We know the families of the police officers who are now listed as in a serious but stable condition have released a public statement saying they're thinking of the loved ones of those killed in this tragedy. And one of the positive elements and an idea and showing of how much the community has been willing to come together in the wake of this tragedy has been Lifeblood. Yesterday, they made a call out needing blood donations. They said that they've been absolutely overwhelmed. As at midday yesterday, they had been inundated with more than 20,000 appointments for people to donate blood nationally.
Tanya Dendrinos there at Bondi Beach. A snap meeting of National Cabinet yesterday, led by the Prime Minister with state and territory leaders, has agreed to strengthen Australia's gun laws following Sunday's massacre. Political reporter Evelyn Manfield reports.
Port Arthur, 1996. 35 people killed. Under then Prime Minister John Howard, public support for stronger gun laws galvanised, becoming a point of pride for Australians. But in the three decades since, research shows there are actually more guns in the Australian community. David Bright is a professor of criminology at Deakin University.
The number of firearms in the country has increased, while the number of registered firearm owners has decreased.
That's based on research by the Australia Institute earlier this year. It shows across the country, civilians own more than 4 million guns, a 25% rise since 1996. But beyond this research, Professor Bright says there's not actually great data, publicly at least, on gun ownership, although the government is implementing a national firearms register.
So that we can track and trace those effectively across state borders, state and territory borders.
But that's not expected to be in operation till 2028.
I think we do need to have a considered conversation about the number of firearms that each firearm owner should be allowed to have in their possession.
Putting the issue into sharp focus, one of the Bondi shooters, 50-year-old Sajid Akram, held a gun licence and six registered firearms. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, along with state and territory leaders, are now vowing to crack down, assessing options like accelerating the firearms register, capping how many guns someone can hold, and making licences only available to citizens, to bolster the post-Port Arthur laws.
Making sure that they operate effectively and that they're kept up to date and that they're updated for the changing threat. Mm. We live in a more dangerous world in 2025.
But frustration over what many see as a lack of action to combat rising anti-Semitism is increasing. Months after receiving a report from anti-Semitism envoy Gillian Siegel, the federal government hasn't formally responded to recommendations, including screening migrants for anti-Semitism and monitoring media, universities and arts. Opposition leader Susan Lee has told Sky News that needs to be addressed.
It takes a long time for the states to do anything, you know that. Mm-hmm. They sit around the table, they put out some nice communiques, and then everything sort of goes into a bit of a black hole. But this report is done. These recommendations are ready to be implemented.
Anthony Albanese also wants anti-Semitism eradicated and says the government is taking action against hate speech, the Nazi salute, and providing security to Jewish Australians.
Evelyn Manfield there. Dr. Anne Ali is the Federal Minister for Multicultural Affairs. Prior to being a politician, she was a counter-terrorism expert. Anne Ali, thanks for joining AM.
Thank you, Sabra.
Many Jewish Australians believe this is not a safe country anymore. Some are talking about leaving and they're disappointed by the Albanese government's approach to anti-Semitism and they feared an attack like the one that actually happened on the weekend. Can you understand their dismay?
Of course I can. I can understand their fear. I can understand the shattering of their sense of security. I can understand their shattering of a sense that Australia is a safe place. What happened on Sunday is absolutely horrendous. This does not define our country. It does not define who we are. I was pondering on this last night, and I think it needs to be said, and it needs to be said repeatedly, because unfortunately hate is continuous and it's a continuous struggle that we have against hate. I've spoken to Jewish Australians in my community in Western Australia. I speak with the anti-Semitism envoy fairly regularly, and I'm aware of these feelings of insecurity that have been growing among our Jewish Australian communities for some time now. That's why we've done things like committed resources to increasing security for them as well.
Yeah.
But yes, I completely understand it. Julian, and I think most Australians would.
Julian Segal yesterday said there hasn't been the education in schools to understand what any anti-Semitism is and how it destroys communities. She delivered quite an extensive report in July, and the government is yet to respond to all of it. Will you respond? And why? Many wonder why the government's been so slow to act on it.
Well, we haven't been slow to act on it, Sabra, and I can give you the details and the list of actions that we have taken that are directly related to or directly align with the recommendations or the actions within Julian's report. Among them, the strengthening of legislation. Among them, the strengthening of institutional accountability and reform. Education awareness and public discourse. We've expanded the work of Together for Humanity that works within schools around education. And I'm very familiar with their work. I've done work with them over a decade ago. We've enhanced the protection of Jewish communities through physical security measures. All of these are actions that are in Gillian's plan.
The Prime Minister says he will do whatever it takes to stamp out anti-Semitism. The ASIO chief said in February that it was the number one threat to life here. Mm. Yet again, I say people think that there is a reluctance to put all those recommendations in place. For example, Ms. Segal yesterday was saying there's not enough monitoring of media to check on anti-Semitism, and it still appears to be sort of flourishing at universities.
There has been work done at universities, Sabra, and that's done primarily by...
Is it happening quickly enough?
...by Jason. There's the National Student Ombudsman established on the 1st of February 2025, and that ombudsman has strong powers, similar to those of a Royal Commission. There's been a review of the Tertiary Education Quality and Standards Agency the Act that has also commenced. So there is work ongoing. But I will say this, I really do want to respond to this question, Sabra, and that is that the fight against hate, the fight against anti-Semitism is a whole of community responsibility. Governments can do so much. They can do so much. We can do things to decrease opportunity, like target hardening. We can do things to set standards around anti-Semitism. But this is a whole of community responsibility. And so... recommendations or the actions within Gillian's report that go to things like education, that go to things like institutional accountability, recognise that it is a whole of community responsibility.
Many people are struggling to understand how a man can be licensed to have 6 weapons and his son, previously under close watch for suspected links to ISIS, can together carry out this attack without authorities knowing. Mm. You're a counter-terrorism expert. How likely is it that no one else knew? And do you see this as an intelligence failure?
Well, I think, first of all, one point to make is that we only ever hear about security when it fails. Unfortunately, we don't get to hear about all the successes that it has or all the plans or plots that have been foiled. That's the first point I would make. The second point that I would make, and I think you'll appreciate this, is that there is an investigation ongoing. I expect that there will be a full investigation. And that it would be really unwise to comment or to speculate at this point about any kind of parts of that investigation while it's ongoing. I will also add there that we need to have confidence in our security agencies, in the police, the swift police response on Sunday. I think Australians can have confidence in those kinds of responses as well.
Some Australians are already questioning the government's motives in tightening gun laws, asserting that this is a distraction from allowing too many people into Australia who aren't genuine in wanting to be part of this community. How do you respond to that?
Well, I would say that this is part of the misinformation, the disinformation that we've seen on social media, particularly on social media. The fact is that, as you just said in your last question, or that you mentioned in your last question, this was a person who had six guns. And whose son, the other perpetrator, had a history and was allowed access in whatever form to those guns. And so it's very clear here that there is a case to be made for a tightening of our gun laws.
And Ali, thanks for talking to AM this morning.
Thank you, Sabra.
And Dr. Ali is the Federal Minister for Multicultural Affairs. While the massacre is impossible to understand, Ahmed Al-Ahmed's actions have been hailed, giving many of us reason to feel hopeful despite the horror. The 43-year-old bystander bravely tackled and disarmed one of the gunmen. He's had surgery on wounds to his arm and shoulder. Videos of his brave act have gone viral. People are donating money to help him, with one of the world's richest men promising $100,000. Rachel Hayter reports.
A father of two young daughters, 43-year-old Ahmed Al-Ahmed, was meeting a friend for coffee in Bondi when the shooting started. The vision of what he did is now an international viral sensation. Footage taken by the public shows the Sydney fruit shop owner charging one of the shooters, now known to be Sajid Akram, wrestling his long-barreled weapon from him, pointing it and letting him walk away.
That man is a genuine hero.
He's like, he's 100% hero.
The hero guy that tackled that, I don't know. I think he deserves all the recognition and support and love from everyone, because he's the bravest person I think I've ever seen.
Police say his heroic actions saved countless lives. He was even praised by Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. Mr. Al-Ahmed's mother, Malika Hassan Al-Ahmed, always knew her son was courageous.
I'm proud that my son was helping people. He saved lives, souls. God would not harm him. My son has always been brave, helps people. He's like that.
Even the US President Donald Trump has recognized Ahmed Al-Ahmed's valor.
He's been a very, very brave person, actually, who went and attacked frontally one of the shooters and saved a lot of lives. So great respect to that man that did that.
He didn't get away unscathed, though. The Syrian-born man, who's lived in Australia for about a decade, was shot several times and is recovering in hospital.
It was split-second timing, and that's why my first impression was, wow, is this guy military trained?
SAS trooper, now psychologist, Harry Moffat knows courage when he sees it. The Afghan veteran, more than impressed.
It couldn't have gone much better. It was a great act of heroism and bravery. And that part at least makes us proud to be Australian.
He describes Ahmed Al-Ahmed's disarming of the shooter as almost seamless.
With his left hand, he grabbed the gun around the gunman's body, and with his right hand, he reached across the right shoulder of the gunman and seized his master hand on the weapon, or his trigger hand on the weapon. So he's got the barrel in his left hand and the assailant's trigger hand in his right hand, and then wrestled him towards the ground, at which stage the weapon came free.
Harry Moffat explained some of the thought processes that may have been rushing through Ahmed Al-Ahmed's mind at the time.
There's certainly fear and anxiety, but there's also a moment of realisation that if not him, then who? And that's apparent in my viewing. And I think I don't want to speak for him, but I imagine that at some stage he decided that he wanted to do something about it. And from that point on, I would imagine he would have been in autopilot.
A GoFundMe account set up for Ahmed Al-Ahmed is attracting donations from around the world, including $100,000 from US billionaire hedge fund manager William Ackman.
Rachel Hayter, that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hi, I'm Andy Park, filling in for Sam Hawley on ABC News Daily. It was an act of terrorism that Jewish leaders long feared. So, in the depths of their sorrow, how are they coping? And what are they asking for? Today, Rabbi Mendel Castell from support group Jewish House, whose own brother-in-law, Rabbi Eli Schlanger, was killed in the attack. And I ask Federal Sydney Liberal Member of Parliament, Julian Lisa, where Australians, outraged at this attack, should direct their anger. Look for ABC News Daily on the ABC Listen app.